From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. Last week, we spoke with mayoral candidates Skip Walther and Brian Treese. We aired that show Monday. Today, we're bringing you a longer cut of our conversation with Brian Treese, who's Columbia's new mayor. We're talking about development downtown and beyond, the police force, and what the new mayor loves about Columbia. Brian Treese is a member of a government and public affairs firm in Jefferson City, and he won the April 5th municipal election for Columbia mayor with 52% of the vote. Before we get to my conversation with Treese, here's part of his victory speech.
You know, first of all, I really think this election was a referendum on whether Columbia is going to be a city that works for all of us by investing in our neighborhoods and improving our infrastructure and fully funding our first responders. And as mayor, I look forward to rolling up my shirt sleeves and getting to work on that immediately.
That was Columbia's new mayor, Brian Treese, speaking Tuesday after winning the election. So let's learn more about our new mayor. Here's the conversation I had with Treese the week before the election. So, Brian, thank you for talking with me. Could you tell me a little bit about why you decided to run for mayor and why you chose now as the moment to do it?
Sure, and it's great to be on KBIA again. You know, Columbia is a great city, but we have a few challenges right now. And, you know, when we started looking at some of the issues that are facing not just downtown Columbia, but all of our neighborhoods and how Columbia is growing, those issues really began to rise to the city council level. And, you know, I chair the Downtown Leadership Council. That's the group that the city council asked to look at our infrastructure issues. And what we found was surprising. Our sewer and water and electrical capacity hasn't kept pace with the rate of our city's growth. Our police and firefighters haven't kept pace with the rate of our city's growth. And, you know, I felt like it was time to really step up and tackle these issues head on.
What do you think are the major issues beyond development that are facing Columbia today? Development definitely being at the top of everyone's mind. Are there others that you'd really like to address as mayor?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Columbia's population is set to double in the next 30 years.
Wow.
And if we're going to be one of the fastest growing cities in the Midwest, we need a blueprint. And as mayor, I want to use that blueprint to really build on what's great about Columbia. I mean, I think all of us have a similar story that we came here, sometimes to college, sometimes for work, sometimes we were born here. But, you know, what keeps us here are those things that we love. And I think that vanishing face of Columbia and everything that we love about this town is under attack right now. And I think one of the things as mayor I want to do is build upon what's great about Columbia and really begin to make those improvements by investing in our neighborhoods, adding more community policing to keep our families safe, but also making city government open, honest, and transparent.
In terms of development, what do we need to do to attain your vision of growth, of positive growth?
Well, I think my vision is that of balanced growth, you know, that incentivizes the types of development that we want to occur, but with all development, making sure that it pays its fair share. Because right now, our neighborhoods and, frankly, taxpayers are subsidizing a certain type of development in a certain part of town, and we're all paying the price for that, whether that's delayed sewer improvements in our oldest neighborhoods or, you know, fast-tracking high-voltage power lines in our newest neighborhoods. It seems like we're cannibalizing our neighborhoods just to subsidize a certain type of growth and development. And I think we need to take a longer view. I think we need to make those much needed and delayed infrastructure improvements that really prepares Columbia for the next 20 and 30 years. But then balance the scales, if you will, to have a more equitable proportion of those costs borne by those that are generating the demand for that capacity.
And when you talk about a certain kind of development, are you talking about sort of high-rise student complexes downtown?
It is. You know, in fact, I've probably knocked on 4,000 doors throughout this campaign, and I haven't had a single person tell me they would like to see more student housing downtown. Hmm. And you know, look, city government should not be in the business of dictating, you know, what type of development occurs. But I think we can set the expectations for how that development occurs, what it looks like, and to make sure that we are maintaining the balance that we all want in our downtown. You know, I've always regarded Columbia's downtown as the front porch of our community. And that's where my wife and I like to go to celebrate wedding anniversaries and birthday parties and enjoy the art scene and the Missouri Theater there. And I get my hair cut at Tiger Barbershop. We like to go to Butch's on Saturday. And I think everybody sees those things that they love about Columbia threatened right now.
And what do you think technically and legally needs to happen to maintain those things that people love about downtown?
Well, sure. The Downtown Leadership Council, which I chair, was part of the effort to update Columbia's outdated zoning ordinance. You know, we have a Euclidean zoning code that was developed in 1950 when our population was 50,000 people. And clearly we've grown beyond that. So one of the things that we have called for is closing the zoning loophole that allows unlimited development with no parking requirements, without any indication of whether there are even adequate utilities in place before that development occurs. So I think that's the first step. The second step is to update that zoning code, and one of those concepts is what's called a form-based code. Instead of regulating the use of that property in terms of you know, either residential or commercial or retail, we reward a mixed use, mm-hmm. that has a balance of retail on the first floor, some parking embedded in integral to the structure, and then a use of either office or residential above. But I really think, you mentioned student housing. I really think there's a market here for young professionals, attorneys, doctors, lawyers that want to live downtown, but also senior citizens that may have gone to college here, that want to come back and be close to hospitals and close to the university that they love and are alumni of. And enjoy Mizzou sports, and they want to have that feeling of living downtown in a vibrant, diverse, safe community. And so I think we need to incentivize that type of development in a way that meets the community's expectations.
And so, if incentives are sort of the carrot, is there a stick as well? Is it to make it more expensive for developers to do certain things?
Well, sometimes, and that's not where this code goes, and certainly doesn't. That's not what it contemplates. If anything, I think this type of development code attracts the types of quality investments and quality projects we should all want. Because right now, developers aren't going to want to come to Columbia and invest several million dollars to build a robust development if there is a concern that their adjoining neighbor next door to them can throw up whatever they want. And so as a result, we're seeing some projects that are maybe, build it, fill it, sell it, take the money, get out of town. And that's not the type of development that we want to encourage and reward. At the same time, downtown is not just the only place where growth is occurring. It's also occurring on our fringe. And when the city makes infrastructure investments, there are certain economies of scale that are generated by having compact investments in the stems of those water lines, utility lines, sewer infrastructure. And when development occurs outside of that urban service area, I think there should be a rate differential that takes into account the added cost the city is going to incur by extending our water lines outside the city limits or outside that predefined urban service area.
It's true. There's a lot of talk about growth downtown, but the growth on the fringes is just as extraordinary, if not more so, I think.
Yeah, and that also drives my real priority, and that is making sure that we're making the concomitant investments in our police and fire protection. Right now, Department of Justice suggests that we're down understaffed by as many as 52 police officers. The firefighters tell me we need two additional fire stations, and when you talk about growth in the periphery of Columbia, we all pay the cost of that in delayed response times. And, it takes 19 minutes to get from Auburn Hills down to Thornbrook, for our police officers. And our response times for the fire department are ticking up. And in a crisis, in an emergency like that, seconds count.
If you're just tuning in, this is Intersection on KBIA. We're talking with Columbia's new mayor, Brian Treese, who was elected last night with 52% of the vote. This is a portion of a conversation we had last week.
And speaking of more police and more fire, of course, there's cost associated with that. I believe that generally the money for police comes from the general fund. Is there enough money there to significantly increase the police and fire forces?
I think there is on a rolling year basis. We can make those incremental investments. You know, the city has a billion-dollar budget. About half of that is dedicated funds on the water and light side. That you know, if we balance those development costs, we can invest in the infrastructure we need there. That leaves about $480 million on the discretionary side. A lot of that is earmarked for voter-approved parks. Sales tax issues. But what I want to do is earmark the growth in that budget. Right now, that growth is around 2.5 to 3%. And that's attributable to more people moving to town, higher sales tax revenue, you know, from SEC football games, earmarking that growth to really make those investments incrementally in additional law enforcement officers. And I want to be clear, with or without a tax increase, we have to prioritize our public safety spending. It's the number one priority that citizens want their city government doing. And frankly, if we don't get that right, the public isn't going to have confidence in those items that some of us may want the city to invest in, like parks and rec and trails and some of those issues. So I do want to make sure that we're making the proper investments in these back-to-basic infrastructure improvements, but also our public safety and fire protection.
And when we talk about that 2 to 3% growth a year, how many police or firefighters could that pay for each year?
Each police officer costs about $100,000. That is salary, fringe, training, a car, you know, that they share on that 12-hour shift. And so that growth, 2 to 3% growth there, is about $2.5 million a year. So that's about 25 police officers that we could add. And if we're down 50, we may not get there in the first year, but I think in the first 3 years we can begin to make those improvements there. To meet the public's expectation of what they say city government should be. 93% want crime prevention and public safety to be the city's number one priority. I think we need to align those budget priorities with those spending priorities.
So the police force could be increased by 25 officers using the budget that already exists. Would that involve taking money that has formerly been used for other departments or other resources in the city?
Well, it depends on whether my growth projections are accurate. And this mm-hmm. came from, you know, the candidate orientation that all city council candidates participated in back in January. I do think there's about $2.5 to $3 million of new budget growth every year. And that's certainly enough to support, the police officers that we need. But again, when I talk to the police officers that patrol my area, you know, they come on duty at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They work a 12-hour shift to 3 a.m. And because we're frequently at status zero and there are no police officers immediately available to respond, a lot of times they come on duty. And the police officer that patrols my neighborhood said, at one point I have 22 calls pending, the earliest of which is someone that called 911 at 8:30 that morning.
Wow.
I mean, that's untenable. And at some point, you know, if it takes 44 minutes to clear each of those calls, we wonder why our police officers have low morale when they're going from one call to another. The consumer is frustrated because they called 911 6 hours earlier and you're just now responding. That has to change. And we can't wait for a tax increase to make it change. I'm not even sure we can wait to get through a budget cycle to add the additional officers that we need to make sure that people feel safe in this town. Because I want to be clear. No one is going to want to send their daughter to college here if they don't feel safe. Businesses aren't going to want to relocate their businesses to Columbia if they don't feel safe. This is a basic function of city government that we have to get right and that we have to fund appropriately.
And in terms of taxes, I think what you were saying before is that in order to even broach the idea of a tax, any sort of tax increase with voters, the officials need to really comb through the budget and be meticulous about presenting any potential increases. Can you think of any situation in which that might happen or you might support a tax increase?
Oh, and I'm not opposed to a tax increase. I think we have to do the hard work of that getting through that budget cycle and really making sure that we're maximizing every dollar that we're receiving. Because even if I asked voters to approve a tax increase, or the city manager suggested one and the city council agreed to put that on the ballot, I'm just not sure there's adequate voter support for that right now until we've done that hard work of really showing how thin our budget is stretched. And, you know, there's a lot of taxing entities now. You know, Mr. Walther chaired the Community Improvement District that added another sales tax on downtown shoppers. There are transportation development districts, you know, at all of the malls, almost all of the retail centers now that have added a half-cent sales tax. The school board is going for a property tax increase. You know, there's just not a lot of capacity for additional taxation. So that means we have to make the best of what we have. And we have to fund those back to basic infrastructure improvements first, and then our public safety needs.
And what are the issues beyond development and police and fire that you would really like to address?
Well, a couple things, and I think, you know, the first thing we have to address is what the Citizen Satisfaction Survey also identified, and that is lack of public confidence in how well the city plans for growth. And, you know, the Downtown Leadership Council made several recommendations on how to improve the public's confidence and trust in the city. And so I want to make sure that we begin to implement those recommendations. But the second, I think, is a real jobs issue. And, you know, as mayor, I want to create some job training linkages that really take the best industries that Columbia does very well, financial services, healthcare. And I think you could even throw in culture with the journalism school, the True False Film, Citizen Jane Film Festival, the film studies program at Stevens College, and the Documentary Journalism Institute that's starting here at Mizzou. But let's just take healthcare, for example. What I would like to do is make sure that someone who maybe gets a job at Lenore as a feeder, if we can connect that person to the appropriate training and education at Moberly Area Community College or Columbia College, maybe they can become a feeder at minimum wage and work their way into a CNA, a certified nursing assistant position, at a little higher salary. And with that experience and the appropriate education experience, they can work their way into an LPN or an RN or maybe Stevens College Physician Assistant Program or some type of medical tech program. I think when we make those investments in having a high-quality, trained workforce, we're in turn going to attract those businesses that want to locate to Columbia because we have a ready-to-work workforce here. We're also at the same time creating those high-wage, high-demand jobs in our financial services industry. You know, Veterans United, Shelter Insurance, State Farm, they compete for IT professionals. University of Missouri turns out about 100 computer science majors every year. 15 of them are going to stay in Columbia, and those three companies are going to fight over them. I would much rather develop that career program here, working with, and I think the city's ready, our economic development arm is in an excellent position to begin to connect the dots with those job training linkages so that when someone comes to Columbia to study for this program, they know they're all but assured a job upon graduation because we have now created the density of those companies, and those companies are coming here because they know we have a pipeline of qualified IT professionals coming out. And those are great jobs for Columbia's economy. And I think we need to, you know, I'd much rather make the investment in our existing workforce and our existing companies and protect those companies here instead of trying to go out and attract new companies to and competing against every other city and all of their incentives and tax credits, et cetera. I'd much rather invest in people.
And tell me about you. What has your sort of professional trajectory been, and what has brought you to a moment where you thought, you know what, I want to invest a lot of my time and energy in the city of Columbia?
Well, I have invested a lot of time and energy in the city for the last 10 years. You know, I came here to college 30 years ago and began working in Jefferson City in public policy. And it was really that skill set, you know, working with healthcare providers and economic development projects and transportation projects that helped inform my opinion. About 10 years ago, I volunteered for a city board and commission, that Historic Preservation Commission. I was honored to chair that for 5 years. I currently chair the Downtown Leadership Council, and I was the city council's first appointee to that, that has really, you know, drilled down on some of these infrastructure issues there. And, you know, it just really made sense that all the issues that we were working on, it just seems it seemed timely to follow those issues to the council level. And frankly, I'm, you know, instead of more of the same, I'm excited that there's a new generation of leadership now that's ready to roll up their sleeves and tackle some of these issues head on. And I think the skill set in my professional career probably transfer well to creating, you know, those job training linkages that we talked about, some of the healthcare investments and the infrastructure and public safety needs that we have right now.
And what do you do? Do you sort of free time? Do you volunteer? Do you love to fish? I don't know.
Yes, all of those things. You know, my wife and I wanted to live close to downtown because I like to say we treat ourselves like tourists in our own town, and so we enjoy the True False Film Festival and Roots and Blues and everything that Columbia has to offer, Mizzou sports. It's a great place to live and raise a family, and I want to keep it that way.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Sarah.
That was Brian Treese, Columbia's newly elected mayor, in a conversation with Intersection, recorded the week before the election. Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I want to thank our producer, Katie Eisterhold. And of course, thank you to our guest, Columbia's new mayor, Brian Treese, who was elected April 5th. Our music is Montana Skies. We also have some good news to share. Intersection will now air at our regular time, which is 6:30 on Monday evenings, and again on Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. You can visit us at kbia.org or check out our Facebook page to see previous shows. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection here at KBIA 91.3 FM.
From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Bram Sable-Smith. Missouri voters went to the polls Tuesday for municipal elections, and KBIA reporters were following the races in mid-Missouri. Mary McIntyre has our first story.
Reporting from Columbia, I'm Mary McIntyre. Carl Scala will continue to serve as Columbia's 3rd Ward City Council member. He won against Tom Luther in Tuesday night's municipal elections by over 300 votes. Scala identified his next big challenge on the council as the proposed changes to the city's development and zoning code. Scala called out for the support from the public on this issue.
I'm going to need more than just the rest of the city council and my inclinations on the city council to do something about this, to make sure that that code serves the entire community and not just any particular part of it.
The project is scheduled to go through the city council later this summer.
From downtown Columbia, I'm Sarah Kellogg.
Apparently the final result has been called.
Columbia City Councilmember Ian Thomas will serve the city for another 3 years after being re-elected Tuesday to serve the 4th Ward. Thomas beat opponent Daryl Dudley by nearly 2,000 votes. Dudley suspended his campaign in late March after Thomas's campaign filed a complaint concerning the Dudley campaign's contribution reporting. Thomas's numbers were strong even at the beginning of the night when Columbia's absentee ballots had him ahead of Dudley. Thomas said the early poll results were promising, but he was most encouraged when he campaigned a few days ago.
The moment for me was probably a couple of days ago when I started door-to-door campaigning in some of the neighborhoods closer to downtown. And it seemed that everybody that I talked to, and even people walking by on the street or bicycling by or driving by, were cheering me on.
As far as Election Day goes, Thomas said he spent the day at work, voting, and listening to his soccer team play on the radio.
Reporting from Columbia, I'm Emerald O'Brien. Incumbent Jan Meese won her 4th election to the Columbia Public Schools Board of Education last night, and she finished far ahead of the 4 other competitors.
And Jan Meese, with almost 10,000 votes, is at 36%.
Meese was 13 points ahead of the next elected candidate. She celebrated her first place win with nearly 50 friends and family members at D. Rose Restaurant, including many current and former teachers and staff from Columbia Public Schools.
Reporting from downtown Columbia, I'm Ryan Levy. It was a big night for Columbia School Board member Jim Witt, who celebrated re-election to a 3rd term along with family and supporters at Flat Branch Pub.
I feel real good, you know. The bond and levy passed, you know. I won re-election. Jan won re-election. So the team's still in place.
It was not clear early on whether Witt would win re-election out of the crowded 5-person field. His numbers were close with Sarah Dubbert all night. Dubbert was upbeat about her close 3rd place finish in her first run for public office against 2 incumbents.
I think this was great. It was an opportunity to have some really intelligent dialogue, not just about issues within the school board, not just about bonds and levies, but also about racial issues, so, you know, socioeconomic issues, issues that maybe are a little harder to decipher and to have that viewpoint heard.
Reporting from the KBIA newsroom, I'm Abigail Corson. Columbia residents approved the Columbia Public School Board's $30 million bond proposal and tax levy increase in last night's municipal election. Columbia School Board member Jonathan Sessions says he and the other members of the school board recognize how much they asked of the community.
I'm thankful that the community chose to tax themselves to take on this burden to support our schools and in doing so support our community.
The $30 million bond that was approved will primarily go toward the land purchase and construction of a new middle school and the expansions of existing schools throughout the district.
Reporting from Jefferson City, I'm Jeremy Schmetterer. J. Rick Mihaljevic had 66% of the votes to Bud Fisher's 34% to win his third consecutive term as Jefferson City's Ward 2 council member. Fisher was Mihaljevic's first opponent for the Ward 2 seat after running unopposed for two terms, and he says this campaign presented him an opportunity to get out and meet Ward 2 residents.
I've been to about every street possible in Ward 2 and met many, many, many residents who on the general liked the city services they were receiving, but they also had concern about the vitalization of neighborhoods and the downgrade of certain areas of our city.
Reporting from Jefferson City, I'm Rodney Davis. Incumbent Glenn Costales kept his spot as Jefferson City 4th Ward City Council, defeating opponent David Durbin. Costales captured 54% of the vote in his victory. Costales will continue to focus on the infrastructure of Jefferson City during his next 2 years in office, something that helped him win this election.
I would like to say thank you to the Police Officers Association and the local Firefighters Union that both were kind enough to endorse me during this campaign.
Reporting from the KBIA newsroom, I'm Lauren Pedersen. Cole County residents voted to continue a half-cent sales tax yesterday. The Board of Directors of the Jefferson City Area Chamber of Commerce supports the renewal. Chamber President Randy Allen says the tax renewal has been in place in Jefferson City for several decades.
30 years we have supported the half-cent capital improvement sales tax, and I think this is a step forward toward continued progress for the county.
Allen also says he is happy with the percentage of voters that supported the sales tax renewal. Almost 80% of voters approved of the tax.
For more coverage of the elections, visit kbia.org. From the KBIA Newsroom in Columbia, I'm Bram Sable-Smith.